Davida, Lord Kuvera was very pleased, and happily he gave Dhruva Maharaj the benediction he wanted. Thereafter, he disappeared from Dhruva's presence, and Dhruva Maharaj returned to his capital city. Purport. Kuvera, who is known as the son of Vidavida, was very pleased with Dhruva Maharaj because he did not ask him for anything materially enjoyable. Kuvera is one of the demigods, so he may put forward the argument, why did Dhruva Maharaj take a benediction from a demigod? The answer is that for a Vaishnava, there is no objection to taking a benediction from a demigod if it is favorable for advancing Krishna consciousness. The gopis, for example, worshipped Katyayani, a demigoddess, but the only benediction they wanted from the goddess was to have Krishna as their husband. A Vaishnava is not interested in asking any benediction from the demigods, nor is he interested in asking benedictions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is said in the Bhagavatam that liberation can be offered by the Supreme Person, but even if a pure devotee is offered liberation by the Supreme Lord, he refuses to accept it. Dhruva Maharaj did not ask Kuvera for transference to the spiritual world, which is called liberation. He simply asked that wherever he would remain, whether in the spiritual or material world, he would always remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A Vaishnava is always respectful to everyone. So, when Kuvera offered him a benediction, he did not refuse it, but he wanted something which would be favorable to his advancement in Krishna consciousness. Tasya pritena manasa tong dutva davidastata pashyato antardadhe sopi svapuram pratyapadyata. The son of Vidavida, Lord Kuvera, was very pleased, and happily he gave Dhruva Maharaj the benediction he wanted. Thereafter he disappeared from Dhruva's presence, and Dhruva Maharaj returned to his capital city. Mukam karoti bachalam pangam langayate girim yat kripatadam bande shri gurum dinatarinam. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a very well-known and oft-quoted verse about the devotees of Lord Krishna or Lord Narayan and how their minds cannot be swayed by any material goal. So that verse is Narayana parasarve na kutaschana bibhyati svarga pavarga narakeshu apitulyarta darshana. Now this verse, in describing the materialistic goals, it mentions three destinations that someone in this material existence can attain as a result of either his karma, good or bad, or being blessed or also being cursed by some powerful personality. So these destinations are Svarga. This is the heavenly planet, heavenly planetary systems. So it's a system, so there's many planets included. For instance, the Indraloka or the Chandraloka and so on. These are the planets where one lives a long life full of sense enjoyment. And yet, in these planets, there is no bad reaction incurred from this sense enjoyment. It's an allowance as a result of one's either accumulation of punya, pious activities, or again being benedicted by some powerful personality. So for a materialistic person, Svarga is really the ultimate in destinations. Then there's Pavarga. So Pavarga, as I think I've noted in several classes here before, refers to this Martyaloka, this place of death, this earthly region. And in Srila Prabhupada's purports, actually two purports, he explains this word Pavarga by dividing it up according to syllables and explaining how each syllable refers to some aspect of this troublesome material life. We don't need to explain that again. But anyway, it means hard work and frustration. Finally, death. This is the Martyaloka. And then Naraka. So Naraka is the hellish region. Nobody wants to go there, but of course, many are going there anyway. again as a result of their sinful activities. Vikarma degrades the soul, and also one may be cursed to enter the hellish planet. So these are the goals or the destinations that are available for conditioned living entities who are interested in sense gratification. They are clearly material, and it is clearly understandable that a devotee of the Lord would not be interested in them. But the point is made in this purport that Dhruva Maharaj was also not interested in liberation. Technical difficulties. Someday we will be liberated from them too. So, yes, the pure devotee is also, perhaps surprisingly, perhaps it seems surprising to us, he's also not interested in liberation from this material existence. So, liberation, what does that mean? There are five kinds.
So,
there is the sayujya on the lowest level. Sayujya means merging into the existence of the Lord, into his transcendental effulgence, known as Brahma Jyoti. Then above that, of course, sayujya is not actually aspired for by Vaishnavas, because in this merged condition, there is no possibility of having a personal relationship with Krishna or his expanded Vishnu Tattva forms. And this is, of course, what distinguishes a Vaishnava from the impersonalist. Prabhupada says the Vaishnavas are known as premanandis. They enjoy prema, love, loving exchange with the personal form of the Lord. And the impersonalists are called brahmanandis. They enjoy merging into Brahman. So, sayujya mukti is for the brahmanandis. Then, the premanandis attain four higher kinds of liberation, beginning with salokya, to attain the planet of the Lord, or sarupya, attain the same form as the Lord, or samipya, to enter the company of the Lord, and sarishti, to attain the same opulence as the Lord. So these five kinds of liberation are available to those who either practice the rigid austerities of the Gyan Yoga system, or to those, the four Vaishnava kinds of liberation, are available to those who practice Vaidhi Bhakti, and they attain Vaikuntha Loka. So then one may ask, well, why doesn't a pure devotee aspire even for these four kinds of Vaishnava liberation? So the reason is, pure devotees, they follow the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Chaitanya explained, is the Amala Purana. It is spotless. There is not even the slightest trace, what to speak of any material, gross material type, or even subtle material contamination, which may bring one to take birth here again in this universe, somewhere, svarga, pavarga, naraga. That's certainly not there. But even the touch of liberation, aspiration for liberation, that is also not there. So Bhagavatam defines liberation in another way besides these five. The Bhagavatam definition of liberation is muktir hitvanyata rupam svarupena vyavashtiti. So this line is also mentioned twice in Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in the purports. So obviously we can understand this must be very important for us to know if Prabhupada is taking such great pains to impress this upon us. So this couplet means that real mukti is to regain one's constitutional position as a servant. Or, in another way of putting it, Prabhupada also says, to recover one's original consciousness. To revive one's original consciousness. So, this liberation then is defined in a completely functional way. It is simply the original function of the soul. So once that original function of bhakti is attained, then liberation is automatically included. The purport of this verse from Bhagavatam is that one should not make liberation the goal. Rather, one should make the revival of one's constitutional position as servant of Krishna. That should be his goal. And then liberation, that's automatically included. This constitutional position of service, actually, that is our eternal nature. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is explained, Nityasiddha Krishna Prema Sadhyu Kabunai Shravanadi Shudachitti Koraya Udai. That in our heart of hearts, we are all Nityasiddha Krishna Premis. Nityasiddha means eternally liberated. Krishna Premi means, of course, lover of Krishna. That is actually our identity right now. And it doesn't just mean the identity of the devotees who are sitting in this room, but it means the identity of all the crazy beings wandering around in Copenhagen right now and everywhere else on this planet, on the earth, in the air, in the seas, wherever they may be. All the living entities throughout the whole universe are actually, in their heart of hearts, Nityasiddha Krishna Premis, eternally liberated lovers of Krishna. But as so many other verses explain, they have forgotten that. Due to having entered the diseased atmosphere of materialism, as we may know, even from experience. When one is suffering from a disease, especially some kind of fever, or one incurs some other great shock, you know, terrible accident or something like that, then this can distort our consciousness, so that we may even have amnesia. We forget who we are, or we become overwhelmed by some hallucination, illusion, and we may even assume some other identity. We may think we're somebody else. So we may think that that is our natural state, but others who know us, they well, come on, you're you're suffering some mental problem, is there? So then they try to help you. So similarly, the conditioned souls, their identity is actually that they're eternal liberated lovers of Krishna. But now they've entered some delusion and have forgotten that and are acting in another way. But because that is our real identity, it is said, Sadhyu Kabunai. You don't have to acquire that externally. It's not something, that identity that you get from somewhere else. It's there. It just has to be uncovered. So how do you uncover it? Shravanadi shuti chitti kore udoy. One engages in the process of hearing. Hearing and of course chanting. Shravanam kirtam. Kirtanam with faith. With intense devotion. And then the identity gradually becomes revealed in the natural course. So, since our constitutional position as servant of Krishna is not something we acquire externally, then here's a question. How is it that we can accept, or Dhruva Maharaj is accepting as a benediction from Kuvera, that he make progress in Krishna consciousness? This is an interesting question. So actually, the answer is that demigods, or anyone who is in the position to benedict or curse, know It's actually a fact. They're not able to give us what we already have. The topmost treasure is already there in the heart. And they can neither add nor subtract from it with their curse or benediction. It's always there. It's eternal. But they can divert us because we're having fallen into this material whirlpool. We are certainly weak in our determination to revive that original identity. So we may become diverted. So someone like Kuvera, who's the lord of wealth, he can, just by his a gesture of his hand, he can award unlimited material opulence to some conditioned soul. And then that conditioned soul, being weak in determination, can very easily become bewildered by this sudden increase of his fortune. So therefore, when asking benediction from demigods, the pure devotees, actually what they're asking is, please leave me alone. That's actually what they're asking. Just like the gopis getting Krishna as their husband. Now Krishna is already their husband. Actually, Krishna is the husband of everyone. Krishna, in his super soul expansion, for instance, is right there in the heart with us. You see, there's so many love songs on the radio about, you know, I'll give you my heart, or you're always in my heart. This is real Maya. His girlfriend into his heart. And similarly, the girl's not going to get him. He's not going to fit in there. But our real beloved and lover is already there in the heart, in his super soul expansion. And he's there because he loves us so much. We've forgotten him. But he doesn't forget us, so he's there. So he's already the husband of everyone. So how will Goddess Durga, Katyayani, establish that relationship with the gopis? As a matter of fact, the gopis, they are conscious of that relationship. They just want it to be confirmed that Krishna will accept them. They're already thinking of Krishna as their only beloved. So they're on the topmost platform. So how will Goddess Durga, who's in charge of supervision of the material energy, in any way enhance this relationship that's already there? So actually, what the gopis are praying for is just leave us alone. Ordinarily, in India, at least, the young girls, when they reach marriageable age, 10, 11, 12, like that, they will do some worship to Lord Shiva or Goddess Durga, praying for some husband. And of course, the husband that they're desiring is some material entity, as Rukmini Devi describes so nicely. We don't have to repeat that. You've all read it. So that's what they get in the result for their prayers. And that is, of course, Maya. Then they become attached to this shadow reflection of Purusha, of the man, the real man, the real Purusha, the real male is only Krishna, Purushottam. But they become entangled with the shadow in this material world. And thus, conditioned life goes on. The wheel of samsara turns. But the gopis, actually, they're praying, don't send us such a conglomeration of bones and stool and blood. We don't want that. We only want Krishna. So if you kindly just don't disturb our relationship with Krishna, then we will be very happy. So this is actually the meaning when a Vaishnava prays for benediction, not to be diverted. Actually, we see that also. We see that very clearly with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's one pastime in which a Brahmin, Brahmins are also empowered to give benediction or curse. A Brahmin wanted to enter the Kirtan hall and see the performance of Lord Chaitanya and his devotees, but he was prevented. As you may know, during Lord Chaitanya's Navadvip pastimes, before the Qazi opposed Sankirtan on the streets, before that time, then Lord Chaitanya, he brought the Sankirtan movement out and brought it among the multitudes. Everyone was coming to chant the holy name, hundreds and thousands of people. But before that time, it was kept very exclusive. At least Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he did not like to engage in kirtan unless it was only consistent pure devotees. So therefore, at the house of Srivas Anga, at the house of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or other such places, the kirtan performance was exclusive. And even persons who were qualified from the material sense, like great Brahmins or great yogis, even they could not enter because their hearts were not overflooded with love of Godhead. So this one Brahmin, he wanted to enter, thinking he is qualified. After all, I'm a Brahmin. I'm purely situated in the rules and regulations. There's no sin in my character. So why I cannot enter and see this? So being prevented, then he became angry. And later on, when he saw Lord Chaitanya, he broke his thread. This is how a Brahmin curses. He saw Lord Chaitanya and he said, "You, snap, you, for that offense of not allowing me to enter the kirtan hall, you will never taste material happiness." And Lord Chaitanya was in ecstasy. Chai, Haribo! He took it as a great benediction. So again, this is a very clear illustration of the type of benediction a devotee seeks. Even if that benediction comes in the form of a curse, the devotee becomes overjoyed. Because it means there will be no obstructions on his path back to Godhead. So now, these five kinds of liberation, they are actually diversions for the pure devotee. In the sense that, you see, this is the Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means place of no anxiety. So one who is aspiring these kinds of liberation, especially the four above Sayujya, then it's a kind of, in his mind, he's kind of, in a speculative way, positing an alternative to the anxieties of this material world. He's suffering so much, so he wants to get out of his suffering situation. So then he may aspire for one of these kinds of liberation. Now the Vaishnava, the four Vaishnava liberations, are not. It's not that they're wholly opposed to devotional service. Actually, they're part and parcel of devotional service. But if one only fixes on these attainments and not on the devotional service, then he cannot really be considered a very advanced devotee. You see, because he's more putting this cessation of anxiety forward as his principal goal, rather than service to Krishna. When we look at the residents of Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan, we will see that they are plunged in an ocean of anxiety. But it is transcendental anxiety. So this is actually by great authorities in Krishna consciousness. This is understood to be the higher platform. Even Goddess Lakshmi. Goddess Lakshmi is the eternal associate of Lord Narayan. So she is transcendentally situated. She is knowledgeable in every way about devotional service. And since she's there reigning as the queen of Vaikuntha, what more could she ask for? But there is something more she wants. She also seems to become, I hesitate to use the word bored, but she seems to become a little dissatisfied with the opulence of Vaikuntha, in which the different types of liberation are there in full abundance. And of course there's no anxiety. But actually she wants to taste that anxiety, which the gopis are feeling. So she assumes form, Vairagya Lakshmi. She performs austerities. There's one temple in Vrindavan where there's a deity of Lakshmi Devi engaged in austerities. So she is performing great, severe austerities in order to attain the position of a gopi. Now, of course, Lakshmi Devi, she is being an expansion, ultimately, of Radharani. So that is the essence of her identity anyway. But Radharani, the Lord's internal potency, she accompanies the Lord wherever he goes. So when he makes his expansions into Vaikuntha as Narayan, then in that form, Lakshmi, Radharani, goes with him. So that is actually her constitutional position, to be with the Lord in that way. But she has some remembrance of her original state, and so she desires to attain that state again. So therefore she's performing these austerities. So we can just look at that, and it's a very clear lesson that simply to attain these kinds of liberation, that's not enough to satisfy one who is very serious about Krishna consciousness. So that realm of Golok, that is the topmost goal of the learned transcendentalists. And as we know, in Golok, then the devotees, they're burning with anxiety to serve Krishna. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that the topmost anxiety is vipralamba, the anxiety of separation from Krishna. Actually, that's more relishable than being with Krishna. There's two kinds of association in direct company, direct personal company, called samboga, and then there's association and separation, in which one is yearning to be with Krishna. This is vipralamba. And as we know, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, he is the personification of this vipralamba ecstasy. Vipralamba sambhudhe parambhujayate namaha. We pray to Gaurakishore Das Babaji. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his Shikshashtakam prayers, we find he's expressing this mood. When he says, Yugayatam nimetena chakshusha pravishayatam shunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahena me. Oh my dear Lord, feeling your separation, I am considering a moment to be as long as a yuga. And I cannot see because my eyes are flooded with tears. And I am feeling this world to be shunya, to be void, devoid of any meaning. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he pointed to this vipralamba as the highest state of Krishna consciousness. All of this can be very confusing for a person who sets his mind on the five kinds of liberation. Because in these five kinds of liberation, what is aspired is to be with the Lord in His company and to have a form just like the Lord and to enjoy the the same opulences as the Lord. This is taken to be the position of spiritual happiness, to be as much like the Lord as possible. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, no, even higher is separation from the Lord. Because then the mind becomes wild with anxiety to be with Krishna. And then Krishna, you see, reciprocates. Krishna is so much beholden to a devotee who simply desires to serve him in some way. Some devotee who is considering himself most fallen, most unfortunate, unable to get the Lord's mercy, and simply wants to render some service. So Krishna, just as the devotee is intensely desiring to be with Krishna to render service, so Krishna is just, or even more intensely desiring to be with that devotee. So the reciprocation becomes very, very, very sweet. So anyway, now, at this present time, in our practice of Krishna consciousness, we are probably not feeling such separation. And therefore, since this is largely inconceivable to us, then we may be thinking more, well, but at least the five kinds of liberation, at least that I can understand. And I think I'd rather aspire for that. But actually, what we should aspire for is purification. This is expressed by Lord Krishna in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that verse, Kayena Manasa Budhya. Kevalier Indriya Api. What is that? Yoginam, yes. Yoginam Karma Kurvanti. Tyaktva Sanga Tyaktvatma Shuddhai. Yes, that's the verse. So there, Krishna is saying that the yogi, meaning the bhakti yogi, the yogi aspires only to work. Karma kurvanti. That means he aspires for activity, for work. But what is the nature of that work? Kaina manasa buddhya kevalaya indriyai api. He works with his body, his mind, his intelligence, and his senses, to, on the one side, sangha tyaktva. Sangha tyaktva means to give up the contamination of material life. Sangha means to associate with material objects, beginning, of course, with the impure mind, senses, and so on. Jeto vishaya pungsam sangat. So the mind contemplates objects of sense gratification. In this way, we begin to associate with them. The word sangha is used. And then from this association, then what comes next? Kaam, lust. And thus one gets implicated in material life. So this is one thing. The yogi aspires to break that sangha, that association. And atma shuddhe. On the other side, he's working for purification. So this is the process of Vaidhi Bhakti Yoga. And we should be in anxiety to advance in this. That we stay and we remain always engaged in the practice, sadhana bhakti, the practice of devotional service. You see, in the Vaidhi Bhakti stage, and even in the Raganuga Bhakti stage, which is more advanced, the process is called sadhana. It means practice. One is not directly serving Krishna as it is done in the spiritual world. That form of bhakti is called prema bhakti. But we're serving according to either invitee rules and regulations, or in Raganuga, one is serving under the direction of the spiritual master so that he can engage his emotions, his purified emotions in Krishna's service. But it's practice. They have not yet attained the goal of complete Krishna consciousness. So we are engaged in practice of devotional service. And that practice has, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, two simultaneous goals: to get free of material contamination and to become purified. Purifying the body, mind, intelligence, senses. And when this body, mind, intelligence, senses becomes purified, then one becomes more and more qualified to attain this muktir hitvanyata rupa svarupena vivashtita, this liberated position of being eternal servitor of Krishna in the spiritual world. So, the best reference, the best way to determine whether one is actually making progress in this practice of bhakti yoga is the reference of preaching Krishna consciousness, preaching book distribution. Because this activity can only be nicely performed by one who is purified. So, and the preaching program is itself very purifying. So even if one is not very purified, Prabhupada very much stressed, if you do it, then you become purified. You may not be qualified, but that should not be an excuse not to engage in preaching work. If one just does it, Prabhupada guaranteed, then one becomes immediately advanced. So, when one engages in preaching, then it's very clear that he cannot allow the contamination of material sense gratification to enter his consciousness, because at that point, immediately, all potency is withdrawn. But also, this aspiration for some type of liberation is also clearly seen as a disturbance. Because a preacher's mind is filled with anxiety. Yes, transcendental anxiety. How am I going to distribute these books? How am I going to convince these people to take up Krishna consciousness? To become devotees. This is his anxiety. Now, if he is simply thinking, when will I go back to the temple? You see, when will I be able to sit down and in a peaceful atmosphere and get out of this crazy situation I'm in now, trying to distribute books on the street? When will I go to India and bathe in the Ganga? Not that these are bad aspirations. No, we don't want to give that impression. But it's just easy to see. If the mind is thinking in that way, then that also becomes an obstruction to the purpose of preaching. So, one who is determined to preach, to distribute books, then he has to even push these thoughts out of his mind. He has to think, simply tell his mind, all right, yes, when the time comes in the due course, you see, when it's time to go back to the temple, then you'll be in the temple. When it's time to go to India during the Gaurpanima festival, then you can bathe in the Ganga, you can see the holy dam. But don't think about that now, because now you have to preach. So in this way, you can very clearly see how one is training up the consciousness to become fixed only on the activity, the functional activity of the liberated soul, and disregard completely material sense gratification and also liberation. So this is indeed a very, very good reference point, preaching, book distribution, these activities. And besides, to engage in these activities, one has to completely depend upon Krishna. This is a kind of mood of separation, complete dependence upon the mercy of the Lord. Whether you show me your favor or not, here I am. Just like Dasavatar Prabhu was speaking last night about his experiences in East Germany, going there to preach. So, you know, there you are in the middle of a strange place. You don't know anybody. You don't have any facility. You don't have anything. So you just have to depend on Krishna, go around, speak to people about Krishna consciousness, begin preaching, and then see what comes, what Krishna provides. And that's the best you can do. So this puts the devotee in a position of complete dependence, complete utter dependence. And he has to think about Krishna. He has to take mentally shelter of Krishna. And he just awaits obediently upon the Lord's mercy. Now this is the germ. This is most wonderful. This is actually, you could say, the germ or the seed of that which is expressed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his last Shikshashtik verse, when he says, Ashlisha va pararitam panashtamam. This verse, you may embrace me in your arms, or you may trample me under your feet. In any case, you're the Lord of my life. So this is unconditional surrender. So a preacher, he has that opportunity to nurture that seed of unconditional surrender in his service. So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is actually presented to the world this Hari Nam Sankirtan program as the means by which even the most unqualified conditioned souls can attain that highest goal of Krishna consciousness. As it is said, the Ras Leela of Krishna and the gopis in Vrindavan is in every way duplicated in Navadvip Dham, in the Sankirtan party of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. It is actually the same ras, the same emotional state, the same state of pure devotion to Krishna. But in Navadvip, which is known as Audharya Dham, where the Lord's munificence, where his magnanimity upon his mercy upon the conditioned souls is displayed in unlimited fullness. So this same ras is presented in a way which is very accessible to anyone. Who would not take it? I once remember hearing a lecture by one of our old ISKCON sannyasis. This was years and years ago in India, perhaps my first visit to India when I was brahmachari. And in Calcutta temple, so in the evening, one sannyasi was giving Gita Pravachan, and there were many Indian guests. So he was speaking about the process of Krishna consciousness, the Yuga Dharma of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how Lord Chaitanya is inviting the whole world to chant Hare Krishna and go back to Krishna. One Indian man asked, Swamiji, you are telling that Krishna consciousness is open for everyone to take, but if that is true, then why it is so difficult? So Swamiji looked at this man and he said, is it difficult to chant? And then the man said, yes. Is it difficult to dance? Yes. Is it difficult to take prasadam? Yes. So then Swami Maharaj said, you must be a crackpot. But for normal people, these are very, very easy activities. So that man, he was of course a bit shocked to be called a crackpot. But it's a fact. Only a crackpot could say that these simple, sublime activities Lord Chaitanya has given us are somehow difficult. They're easy and natural. Prabhupada used to say, even a child can chant. Even a dog can chant. That's been seen in ISKCON farm communities. In one community in the United States, years ago, there was one dog. And he used to clearly chant, Hari Ram. So he would make some sound, Hari Ram, Hari Ram. And he would always run into the kirtan. Whenever there was some procession outside, then this dog would come and he would frolic along with the devotees in the kirtan and he would chant, Hari Ram, Hari Ram. So if even a dog can chant, then why can't a human being chant? What is the problem? And so this Krishna consciousness program, Sankirtan movement, the congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and taking it forth among the populace and spreading it, this is such a simple, sublime method which brings one into the most confidential realm of Krishna consciousness. It immediately brings one beyond even the five kinds of liberation which are sought after. Just like there are the four Vaishnava Sampradayas, where the classical Vedantic Vaishnava Vedanta philosophy has been explained in so many ways, and these Vaishnava Sampradayas have defeated the Mayavadi philosophy and established great temples all over India. So these communities of Vaishnavas are very, very respectable. But even they, their ultimate aspiration, because they're all practicing Vaidhi Bhakti, so their ultimate aspiration is for the four kinds of Vaishnava liberation. So, as great as they are, you see, exalted Brahmins, just like the, still today in South India, Tamil Nadu, one can visit so many of these great Sri Vaishnava temples, huge, magnificent temples. And one sees the Sri Vaishnava Brahmins with their big tilak, their big bellies, doing so much elaborate puja, chanting so many mantras. It's very impressive when we visit, always become very impressed with the Vaishnava rituals. And over in Udupi also, the Shtanam of Madhvacharya, the Madhva Brahmins, Vaishnava Brahmins are there, also engaged in Vaidhi Bhakti, worship of the deity according to Pancharatra. And when you go to Mayapur, you see this elephant procession. So, with the special, the special things they do, and also the fireworks. So this is a duplication of what one sees in Udupi on Saturday night. They have this very similar elephant procession with the deities on the back of the elephant, fireworks display, chanting and drum beating and all of that. So it's impressive, and we in ISKCON, we like to borrow some of these rituals because they're very attractive to to the common people. So these communities of Vaishnavas are certainly very respectable. But even they, by their Vaidhi Bhakti, are aiming at the four kinds of liberation. But Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan party, the Sankirtan movement, carries one even beyond that, to the topmost platform of pure devotional service, as explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we should consider ourselves most fortunate to have somehow or other attained a position in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. And the aspiration of our activities, the anxiety that we should have in the performance of our activities, is simply that our devotional service steadily becomes more pure and we become more enthusiastic to engage in devotional service. Naturally, as we become more pure by engaging in devotional service, the enthusiasm in the heart increases. So we should have anxiety. We should not become diverted to some comfortable position, even a comfortable spiritual position. This is a diversion, an obstruction. Rather, we should have anxiety to become more purified and more enthusiastic, and let that anxiety, that it is known as lobha, greed, let it develop in the heart more and more and more. And it will carry one up. There is this ascending ladder of stages in devotional service. From Shraddha to Prema, ninefold stages. So actually it's this anxiety that propels one upward. Just to explain briefly, in the Shraddha state, the state of faith, one sees the devotees or receives a book or has some kind of brief contact with the devotees and develops some faith. Here's the radio Krishna. He develops some faith. And then along with that faith, there may be, if he's fortunate, some anxiety. Well, I have to do something. Yes, this is very nice, so I have to do something. So then sadhu sangha, then he naturally aspires to associate with the devotees. So he comes to the Sunday feast and he develops relationships with the devotees, gets to know different devotees, hears what they have to say. And then this increases his anxiety. Well, then they're so nice, they're so nicely advancing, such great souls, I must also take up this process. Then bhajana kriya, he takes up the practice of devotional service under direction of spiritual master. And then this leads to further anxiety, anartha nibriti, that the heart must become purified. Because the only obstruction that we have in our execution of devotional principles are these impurities. So naturally we want to get them out of the heart. And then that leads to nishta, and nishta to ruchi, taste. So that sweet taste furthers the anxiety. And that leads to asakti, attachment, and then attachment leads to bhav. Bhav leads to prem. All is a natural evolution. So right now in this Vaidhi Bhakti platform, our anxiety should be for increasing purification and increasing enthusiasm. So don't think the goal is to become mellow in the New Age movements. This is their goal, to become very mellow and happy with a big smile on the face and very relaxed and peaceful and not in anxiety about anything. No, that's not enough. Not enough to actually satisfy who we really are. And who are we really? Nitya Siddha Krishna Premi. That's who we really are. So it's 8:30, and we can stop here. Are there any questions, Janu Prabhu?
Is it that the four sampradayas, they exemplify one of the liberations, one of the four Vaishnava liberations?
They exemplify? I've never heard about anything like that.
No.
Do you have any source for thinking that way? Or?
No, because you said that they... these four sampradayas, they attain these four liberations. So maybe
they engage in Vaidhi Bhakti, and Vaidhi Bhakti, ruchi, taste. So that sweet taste furthers the anxiety. And that leads to asakti, attachment, and then attachment leads to bhav, bhav leads to prem. All is a natural evolution. So right now in this Vaidhi Bhakti platform, our anxiety should be for increasing purification and increasing enthusiasm. So don't think the goal is to become mellow in the New Age movements. This is their goal, to become very mellow and happy with a big smile on the face and very relaxed and peaceful and not in anxiety about anything. No, that's not enough. Not enough to actually satisfy who we really are. And who are we really? Nitya Siddha Krishna Premi. That's who we really are. So it's 8:30, and we can stop here. Are there any questions, Janu Prabhu?
Is it that the four sampradayas, they exemplify one of the liberations, one of the four Vaishnava liberations?
They exemplify? I've never heard about anything like that.
No.
Do you have any source for thinking that way? Or?
No, because you said that they... these four sampradayas, they attain these four liberations. So maybe
they engage in Vaidhi Bhakti, and Vaidhi Bhakti leads to Vaikuntha, the Vaikuntha Bhav. Vaidhi Bhakti leads to Bhava, a kind of ecstatic spiritual state, but that's in Vaikuntha. And in the Vaikuntha, these liberations are prominent. They're a prominent concern. Just like there's this awe and reverence to the Lord. So the reason there's this awe and reverence is because the desire for liberation, you know, being liberated from the material world is somewhat prominent in the minds of the devotees. So one is, you know, still in this mood of, you know, praying to the Lord for some favor. Let me stay here in Vaikuntha. But actually in Goloka, then that distance, that relationship of awe and reverence, it disappears. And one relates with Krishna as friend, as lover, you know, as son. These are the prominent features of the mood of devotion in Goloka, these top three rasas. Dasya ras is prominent in Vaikuntha, and of course in the Brahmajyoti, or with Paramatma on the borderline of the spiritual and material world with Vishnu, then Shantaras is prominent.
What about Lakshmi in my process? She has conjugal ras?
Yeah, she has conjugal ras, but in this opulent mood, like the queens in Dwarka also. There are two kinds of conjugal ras. One is very intimate and sweet, as the gopis experience in Golok, and then one is filled with opulence, majesty. And it is also the marriage mood, you see, svakya, that is exhibited in Dwarka and Vaikuntha Dham.
I would like to know what is the relationship between karma and
purposing a benediction in the destination of the person. If the person is like going to reap the results of pious activities, generally pious people first, how is that related?
What is that? Generally pious people or cursed?
If a person, how is the destination of a person, how is that between karma and benediction or curse? If a person is going to be destined for a pious destination, but then some person curses that person, and he may go down and take some kind of no body like that. So how is that related? If he is going to, he's generally living piously, but then he goes down due to being cursed. So how is that?
It means that he's committed some offense, or somehow or other he's angered someone who's powerful, powerful yogi, powerful Brahmin. So whether it's an offense or just a simple mistake, he got himself into trouble. So then the curse, the effect of the curse is that the pious results are destroyed.
Destroyed? Then just push up, going to be enjoyed later. How can they be destroyed?
Well, a powerful person can do that.
Yeah.
Just like, but this is the point, that if one has engaged in the spiritual piety of devotional service, just like Maharaj Indraduna. So he was cursed to become an elephant. So he, of course, being a king, was situated in great material piety also. But he was a devotee. So his material opulence, or material results of his material activities, pious activities, were withdrawn, removed. He had to enter the body of an elephant. But still, the results of his devotional service, they were retained in the heart. So then, when he was grabbed by that crocodile, then he could remember to pray to the Lord. And then the Lord descended from Vaikuntha and delivered him. So material attainments can be destroyed. That's understood. That's why we call them material. But spiritual attainments are never destroyed.
And also, is it austerities which make a person, like superior person, able to curse or benefit? Is that austerities? No non-ordinary person can do that if he curses or benefits. Obviously, qualifications and all.
Yeah, austerity is the means to attain power. So, depending on the mode of austerity, you see, one can perform austerities in the mode of ignorance, like that Vrikasura, who wanted to cut his own head off to please Lord Shiva. So this is austerity in the mode of darkness. But he received benediction from Lord Shiva. But it was also tamasic power. In the mode of passion, there are austerities. Just look at the businessmen, you see, running around the world, you know, catching planes, catching trains, you know, living out of a suitcase, martini breakfast. Like that, they're performing austerities in the mode of passion and ignorance mixed. For getting some worldly success in this lifetime. Then austerity is in the mode of goodness. Actually, that is still material. That's aimed at the demigods. That's explained by Krishna in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. That religion in the mode of goodness means worship of the demigods, according to Vedic rules and regulations. So that will promote one to a higher material position in the next life. And then there's austerity in the mode of Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness, which is transcendental, which is like the devotees when they engage in preaching Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada commented that the austerity of going out on Harinam Sankirtan, downtown Copenhagen, when people laugh or, you know, maybe sometimes they throw something or whatever, This is also some austerity, but Krishna counts that austerity as being millions of times more powerful than the austerities of great yogis who sit in the ice in the Himalayas. Just simply to go once on Harinam Kirtan and endure whatever you have to endure out there. This is so much more pleasing to Krishna, yields so much more result. But of course, devotee, he neither curses nor benedicts in the material sense, nor can he be cursed nor benedicted. So, although he's performing the greatest austerity, it's not for that kind of power. Rather, it's for the power to preach Krishna consciousness. Madhvacharya has made an interesting observation that the fruit of bhakti, palon mukha vritti, is bhakti itself. Whatever we do is simply to further what we're doing. So, we go on Harinam Sankirtan or distribute books or go preaching to become empowered to do more Harinam Sankirtan, distribute more books and do more preaching. And that's the real benediction.
You mentioned the importance of preaching, so also we hear that sometimes the goal of our preaching is to make friends. So I was wondering if when we go on and on, we should pray and be excited and pray for Jesus that our preaching or our Harinam will make friends, or we should just perform our service and let it be up to Jesus.
No, this is all part of, you see, we should be in anxiety to improve our service, to ourselves become more purified and to become more enthusiastic. Then if we are more purified, more enthusiastic, then we will be able, by Krishna's grace, to attract persons to take up, to enter our association. Prabhupada said that the whole goal of this mission is to simply generate appreciation in the minds of the karmis who observe us in our activities. They should appreciate. So they will certainly appreciate if they see pure and enthusiastic devotees. Now, but what you're saying is also, I mean, it's also, it's part of that. It's identical. It's identical that we have our service to do. We want to become more pure, more enthusiastic, and the proof of that, the proof, because everything is practical in devotional service. It is not simply theoretical. Oh yes, I'm pure, I'm enthusiastic, but I'm not doing anything. I'm not accomplishing anything. Like Prabhupada told the story of two men in a discussion, and one man asked the other, it was a kind of hot discussion. So one man asked the other suddenly, "Do you have any intelligence?" And then that man who was asked this question, he started looking in his pockets. He was feeling in his pockets. And then the other man said, "What are you looking in your pockets for?" Because he was thinking, "What, are you looking in your pockets for intelligence or what?" And that man said, "No, I'm looking to see how much money I have. Because if I have some money, that means I have intelligence." So we can talk of purity and enthusiasm all we want to, but if there's no proof of it, you see, if we're preachers and nobody is joining, nobody's attracted, then that would indicate that there would be some lack in ourselves. At least we should take it that way. And so, yes, we should always be in anxiety. So if we see no devotees are coming, certainly we should pray to Krishna. Please send devotees. But you see, at the same time, you are Krishna's instrument. The preacher has to accept this responsibility, just like Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Like Prabhupada said, the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita wasn't that Arjuna said, "Okay, Krishna, you fight," and he sat down and smoked marijuana. But the devotee becomes Krishna's instrument. So in making devotees, the preacher is Krishna's instrument. He has to accept that responsibility. He also cannot just pray to Krishna, "You do everything," and then he's, you know, just his mind is on vacation, you know, when he goes out to do Harinam and preach and whatever, his, you know, he's always just somewhere else and not really into it with full vigor and attention. So, yes, purity and enthusiasm must be there on our part. We must pray for this. And if we become worthy instruments, then Krishna will send the devotees. Krishna will take it that yes, you are making nice advancements, so you deserve some credit. So here's a couple of bhaktis. And then it becomes known. Oh, Jayana Shrina, he just made 2 bhaktis today. He brought them back. Shaved them up.
You know, there's this saying, Buddhya Yasha Parintashyan Nirvides Tubhutubaram, that a person who has intelligence, he has strength, and one who has no intelligence, he has no strength. So what is an example of that? Can one understand that? That if you have no intelligence, you have no strength?
Yeah, so that's, you just look at it in terms of second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna explains the difference between vyavasayatmika buddhi, real intelligence, which is situated on the spiritual platform, Atman, in other words, the intelligence is fixed in the self, in the soul, knowing that that is what I am. I am not the body, I am spirit soul. And Krishna opposes that to what is that? Tayapahirta chetasam. When the apahirta chetasam, when the consciousness is deviated by material attraction, manas chanchala ashtiram, he tells Arjuna that the mind is very flickering and uncontrollable. So this is the state of the materialist. And Krishna says he cannot, such materialist cannot become fixed in the determination to serve Krishna, to make progress in devotional service. He's always on the mental plane, always floating around, being attracted by this, being attracted by that. He just can't get it together to make tangible progress in Krishna consciousness.
So
one who has strength, that means strength in Krishna consciousness, strength to execute Krishna consciousness under the regulative principles. He must have intelligence. The real intelligence, vyavasayatmika buddhi. It doesn't mean that he's a walking encyclopedia, you know. you ask him, you know, on what date did, you know, King Henrik III ride on his horse to to Roskilde from his palace, you know, here in downtown Copenhagen. And then he spits out some number. Yes, in 1822, on July 4th. That's not intelligence. If that was intelligence, then, you know, computers would be the best devotees. They're very expert in storing away all kinds of information, but that doesn't add up to intelligence. Yes?
Svaga and Pavaga, my understanding is Pavaga is the system of earthly planets. So why is it that modern scientists and so-called scientists have not brought some information that they can observe these planets? They're supposed to be closer than the heavenly planets, so why do you have some contact with some other earthlings and other planets in your mind?
Because this is Kali Yuga. And there is a universal program or universal policy of quarantine. You know quarantine? When you know, someone has, if there's some sickness in a house like tuberculosis or whatever, then those people can't come out of their house and other people can't go in the house. So on this earthly planet, there is sickness. Kali Yuga sickness. So this planet has been cut off from all other regions in the universe. That's why Now, when you fly in an airplane, you just go around in a circle, come back to the same point you started from, ultimately. Actually,
there is a region of earth dependence around us.
Yeah, it's described in fifth canto. These different dvipas, separated by different kinds of ocean. But if you try to sail, this Jambudvipa is surrounded by the salty water ocean. So you may think, oh, let me sail to the next dweep or fly to the next dweep by traversing the ocean. But you end up in the same place you started from, ultimately. So this is a special arrangement nowadays. Because the human beings are not qualified. Nobody wants to associate with them. So they're prevented from leaving this place. Even if they built this fancy spaceship, they think they go to the moon, but they just end up in some desert somewhere.
Is it not also the case for the other earthly planets that they are also isolated?
That may be, but it is also stated that these other earthly planets are more material opulent than we are. So they may also be experiencing Kali Yuga symptoms themselves, but they certainly don't want us to come there. You know, it's just like rich people who live in their own neighborhood, and they don't want people from the ghetto coming. Let them stay in the ghetto. So they always make, in America at least, they make these clever arrangements, what they call zoning laws, and different clever arrangements so people from the ghetto can never move into a rich neighborhood. It's you know, under the cover discrimination. So something like that.
Mm-hmm. These three liberations and the four liberations, Vaishnava liberations, are they present in Goloka Vrindavan?
Yeah, automatically. They're part and parcel of pure devotional service in the spiritual world. But, you see, one should not make them the goal. One should make the goal service to Krishna. It is said, for a pure devotee, Prabhupada once said, liberation stands with folded hands, just waiting to render some service. And material opulence rolls at the devotee's feet, and she's crying out, take me, take me. Well, yes, and as I said, it's already there in the heart. He's the Lord of Wealth. So his normal business is, he's guarding the treasure of the demigods, and when the demigods want to bestow some opulence on someone, then he's like the treasurer. So he's releasing that opulence. So he's in a position to directly or indirectly give opulence to the conditioned souls who please the demigods. So that's one way of understanding it, if he does not bewilder the minds of devotees, and they can, you know, by bestowing unnecessary opulence, or opulence that cannot be engaged in Krishna service, then in this way the devotee is free to uncover in his heart what is already there, pure devotion to Krishna. But then another way of looking at it is that these demigods, they're all Vishnu Bhaktis. Vishnu Bhakti Smrito Daiva. And their business of giving material benedictions, that's a job they do, you know? Just like a policeman or administrator, he's got his job. So all day, all kinds of less intelligent people come to him and they're asking him for some help. And so he's doing that as his duty. But these demigods being themselves devotees of Krishna, so you know, that's like their inner ecstasy. They're doing this dull, boring job, but for Krishna. So if they happen to meet someone out of all these conditioned souls who actually just ask for Krishna consciousness, they become very happy. And then whatever is in their power to give spiritual benediction as devotees, devotee can do that, Vaishnava's blessing is even better than Krishna's blessing. Lord Shiva tells this to Parvati. Service to Vaishnava is better than serving Vishnu, because Vishnu says, he told Durvasa Muni, aham bhakta pradino yashpatanta iva dvija, I have no independence from my devotee. Sadubir grasta hridaya bhakto, because their hearts are so pure, I am forcibly attracted to live in their heart, bhakta janapriya. And I'm so much beholden to my devotees that anyone who becomes dear to them, a bhakti jan, a follower of these devotees, they automatically become dear to me. So it's actually difficult to become dear to the Lord directly. It's much more difficult. But the devotees are so magnanimous. So if someone becomes dear to a devotee of the Lord, then Krishna's automatically, he wants to so much please his devotee that if he sees, oh, this man is with you, alright. And he gives his full mercy to him, even though that man may not be qualified at all. Somehow or other, this devotee just likes him, and he likes the devotee. And then the Lord says, oh, he's with you? Alright. He can also take the full load of mercy.
So the devotee in that case, he doesn't feel that I can get to this. But it's said like, he's pleased to get the mercy.
Yeah, he just becomes pleased. He became so pleased with Dhruva Maharaj's request. And then he'll think, yes, whatever is in my power as a devotee of the Lord to give this blessing, certainly, whatever I can do for you, let me do. And then when the Lord sees this, he becomes so much pleased. Of course, both of them are devotees, so the Lord just enjoys the reciprocation between his two devotees. It's not actually that Kuvera is giving benediction to Dhruva Maharaj, but the Lord enjoys such reciprocation between devotees. So he becomes pleased. They both get the Lord's blessing, Lord's mercy. Well, this is a question that really has nothing to do with the class. This is called a danda. So it is carried by sannyasis. It consists of... there's inside and some bamboo rods. Now, the basic danda has one bamboo rod. It's called Eka Danda. The Jiva Danda refers to the soul. And then Vaishnavas have three additional dandas, Tridanda. So body, mind, words. So the Mayavadis carry only the Jiva Danda because they think that everything is one. So Eka, you see. It's like an affirmation that I am spirit soul. And spirit soul is Brahman, and Brahman is God. So just by realizing that I'm spirit soul, not the body, I have attained everything. But the Vaishnavas understand that the spirit soul is a servant of Krishna. And so the spirit soul is now encased in the body and the mind. So with body, mind, and words, he can serve Krishna in this world and then revive his relationship with Krishna. So a sannyasi carries this danda to show that he only engages his body, mind, words, and ultimately his soul in Krishna's service and nothing else. So we carry that wherever we go. Another question? Money.
Some people get into the mission immediately and some they have to affirm for years and then Is it the most natural thing to be in the future?
It's natural, but we may be unnatural. As I explained, we're in diseased consciousness, so that diseased consciousness leads to unnatural desires or unnatural tendencies. So then, as a result of that, we may not have the strength or enthusiasm to go out and preach Krishna consciousness. So then there's other options, because ultimately everybody is engaged in preaching Krishna consciousness, because this is the Sankirtan mission. But some of us may not be so directly engaged perhaps it's due to our own contamination. Actually, as devotees, we should always think that way. This is the vision we should have. I would like to do more preaching. I would like to also be out and distribute books or preach Krishna consciousness directly. But I am too unfortunate. I have too many material desires. So therefore, I am supporting the preachers by my service. This is actually proper attitude. And by such attitude, we will get the blessing of spiritual master and Krishna. So it may be due to our own contamination, or it may also just be due to necessity that somebody has to stay back in the temple. But then in the temple we should develop that vision that this is the Sankirtan mission on all fronts, in all services. We are ultimately pushing forward this Krishna consciousness movement. That's a very healthy point of view, to connect our service, whatever it may be, working in the kitchen, serving the deity, to ultimately connect what we're doing with the preaching mission and to maintain that consciousness. Then we will become very enlivened in our service. And that's, you know, in this way one becomes a preacher. Then, you see, it's also this kind of like mood of separation. One is doing one service in the kitchen, for instance, just for example. But always thinking of preaching, always thinking how this service also is pushing on the preaching mission, and I wish I could preach, but I have to do this. And then, but by that constant meditation, then Krishna reciprocates. Krishna will sometimes send someone one afternoon when there's nobody around, and some nice person comes to the door, wants to know about Krishna consciousness. And the only one who's there is Kitchen Mataji, so she can bring the person in and give prasadam and preach. So it's a wonderful opportunity. Anyway, the point is, if one desires strong enough, see, if one is really desirous and really has the determination, then one will certainly get this opportunity for full engagement in the preaching mission. There's no doubt. Any other questions? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.